Today is Thursday, November the 5th, 2015. We're going to hear Moshe Soloveitchik Shir and Parshas Chayesarah.
Next class is being sponsored by Donald Newman in honor of his grandson, Avid Shapiro. So it's for his bar mitzvah, and it's also at the 89th yard site of Eric Weiss. What was his Hebrew name? 89th yard site of Eric Weiss, who died at the age of 52 on October 31st, 1928, the 23rd of Cheshvan, which is today. And Eric Weiss is probably better known to you as Harry Houdini.
Oh.
So, so a little magic.
Oh,
so
his birthday this week.
One other thing, please silence your phones.
That's the Goldstein's by Mitzvah.
I can't vibrate.
What did you say?
Or turn them off.
It's the disappearing act.
He's always looking for a way to come back.
That was
his dream.
You know, American Airlines. Okay. I was thinking about what to speak. So I'm going to start off with something that I heard from my father, and then I'm going to suggest another answer, and it's in line with an idea, although I never applied it to this question, it's in line with an idea that I've expressed before. The Torah tells us about Sarah passing away, and it's very interesting, just as a side note, a very strange medrash that said that Sarah passed away because the Satan gave her the impression. There are those that try to reread the Medrash. So I think some very nice svarim try to do it. So first of all, the way they reread the Medrash clearly doesn't fit into all the Medrashim that mentions this. It might fit into the Medrash Rabbah, but not into the Medrash Tadkuma, vice versa. But the Sutton appeared as someone coming and telling her that Abraham slaughtered Yitzchak, and as a result of that, Yitzchak Sarah died. And the question asks, and the question is asked, and so Parcha Nishmasim Imeno Umesa. That's what Rashi says. Shenizda azdamein b'no l'shchita uchmat shalo nishchat. Porcha nishmasa umimenu mesa. And there's one medrash that says, some try to read it, uchmat shalo nishchat. She got upset that he didn't shech them, which is very strange. But there is another girsa, there's another text that says, that porcha nishchat. The shalom isn't there, but the answer is very, very simple. Sarah was 127 years old. It's not easy to live at the age of 127 years old. You need to have something that keeps you going. You have to be motivated. Sarah, what kept Sarah going? The fact that she knew that she had to prepare Yitzchak to be the successor to Avraham Avinu. And this was her task at life right now. In other words, her original task was to be the partner of Avraham and being Makariv people and in a sense in starting the Jewish nation and all that. She did all of that. She did all of that. But now it was a period of preparing Yitzchak to take over. And when she was under the impression that Yitzchak was no longer there, her task in life was no longer there. Her mission was no longer there. And because her mission was no longer there, so she passed away. It's interesting. The Rosh Yeshiva of Meir in New York, Reb Shmuel Birnbaum, a very, very nice man and person who had enormous avas of Torah, love of Torah. And when he became sick and he wasn't able to give shir anymore, so he said, what's the purpose in life? And shortly, to him, that's what kept him going. What kept him going was that mission in life. So there are people that what keeps them going is a certain mission in life. Her mission came to an end. So she died because she didn't have that mission to keep her going. But so after she dies, so I have to admit that from the Baal HaTurim it appears not the way I suggested. I'm not going to go into it now because that's not the main focus of what I'm discussing, but I just felt that it's important to mention this pshat. But the Baal HaTurim, so then Avram has to find a burial place for Sarah. And the Torah describes at length the whole discussion that took place, how he tried to get the Ma'aras HaMachpelah, to get the Ma'aras HaMachpelah as a burial plot. And then, first, Avram says, "Give it Soshav Anochi Machem, Tnuli Achuzas Kevri Machem." So he says, "So he asked for a burial plot, so that I could bury Sarah." So he talked to the Bnei Ches. He met with the Bnei Ches. And you have to understand, Avram was revered. Certainly at this time he was revered, not just by his own camp, so to say, but he was revered by the nations around him. So, Shmaenu Adoni Nesiel Kimat HaBasuchenu, you are a prince of God in our midst. And it's interesting, Avram was revered not just because he was a smart man. Avram was revered by the nations, and the nations were people who worshipped idolatry. But what did they revere him? They recognized that he was a prince of God. So it's interesting that even people who worship idols sometimes recognize the greatness of a person who is associated with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'ro'u kol amei aretz kishem Hashem nikra elecha b'yorum imecha. All the nations of the world will see kishem Hashem, because the name of God is on you, and they revere or fear you. Now, there's a very interesting story of the Vilna Gaon. I think I mentioned it here once. The Vilna Gaon was taken as a prisoner. And as a matter of fact, they recently discovered, when the Soviet Union fell apart, so all the records were opened up, and they had records dating back to that time, and they were listing the prisoners in the prison in Vilna,
I saw a picture of that entry, and for very interesting, which is he's listed down as Eliyahu Chassid.
Oh.
The Vilna Gaon's name. Now, because the Vilna Gaon was known as the Chassid, not the Chassid the Chassid in the Hasidic movement, but a Chassid of a person who is a very pious person. So apparently, when they asked what's his name, who is he? So they said Eliyahu Chassid. So whoever was writing the records in the prison wrote Eliyahu Chassid. So his name was written down, Eliyahu the Pious. So probably the one who wrote it down really thought that was his name, but it was just a title that people gave him. So the nations of the world, so they came to question him. So the Vilna Gaon had his talis and tefillin on. So the one who came in when he saw the Vilna Gaon talis and tefillin, he ran out. So the government official. So there was somebody else in the jail there, and he asked the Vilna Gaon, "Why did he run out?" He says, "Well, it says." All the nations of the world will see. Kishem Hashem Nikra Lecha, the name of God is on you. V'yarum Mecca, they'll be scared of you. And the Gemara in Brachah says, I'm a Rabbi Lezer. Rabbi Lezer says, Zu the tefillin Shabarosh. This is the tefillin of the head. And I was wearing my tefillin, so he ran out. So this guy figured, hey, they'll come in to question me. I'll wear my talis and tefillin, and they'll run out also. So they came in to question him, and he was wearing his talis and tefillin, and the guy didn't run out. And they said, contrary, they started beating him up. So he went to the Vilna Gaon, and he said to the Vilna Gaon, how is it that with you they ran away, and with me they beat me up? I was also wearing my tefillin. So the Vilna Gaon said to him, it says, Zu tefillin shebarosh. This is the tefillin in the head. It doesn't say this is the tefillin on the head. In other words, the tefillin has to be part of the personality of the person. It can't just be a costume. It can't even be clothes. It has to be part of who the person is. So the Rambam actually says something like that. The Rambam says that a person that doesn't apply today, a person should try to wear tefillin all day long. Why? Because as long as the tefillin is on him, he's anav, he's modest, he has fear of God and all that. In other words, the tefillin molds the character of the person. So Avram, in other words, the nations of the world, they worshiped idols, but they recognized the godliness in Avram Avinu. So they said, Nesi Elokim Ata B'Sechenu, you are a prince of God in our midst. It's B'Mivchak Farenu, in the best, in the select of our graves, Kvoris Mesecha, bury your dead, bury Sarah. Ishmi Menu as Kivril O Yichla Mimcha Mikvor Mesecha. No one will prevent you from using their grave for your usage. So, in other words, they were determined. They wanted very badly that Avram should bury the dead in their cemetery. And I'll tell you why I'm want to discuss this, because of the many years ago, I mean probably 20 some odd years ago, the archaeologist went into to the Maris Machpelah. You know, the Maris Machpelah is called Maris Machpelah because the two reasons given in the Medrash. One reason given is because it's a cave that has two floors. Maris Machpelah is double, so it's a double cave. And then the other reason given is because it had an inner room and an outer room. Now, that was always very, very troubling. That was always very troubling to the archaeologists because it didn't have an inner room and an outer room. But when they went downstairs in the second level, which no one went for hundreds and hundreds of years, they say that after the Six-Day War, Moshe Dayan went down there. But later on, archaeologists also, but he never talked about what he saw. But later on, archaeologists went down there, and they saw that other opinion on the lower level was correct. In other words, both opinions were correct, both opinions in the Medrash. The opinion that says it's a double level, that was correct. And the opinion that says there was an inner room and an outer room, that was also correct on the lower level. So, and that was something that they didn't know till quite recently. But they also found there on the lower level many, many bones. Bones of people. And according to the scientists, the bones dated back to the times of the Avos. Now, it wasn't the Avos. The Avos are buried in somewhere in the walls, wherever it might be. It's not the Avos and the Imos. It was many, many, many people. Now, that presented a dilemma to me. I'll explain what the dilemma was. But first, I want to say over what the. I started on this. I'll say over my explanation first, and then I'll say over my father's explanation, because everything that I said now has to do with my explanation. Anyway, So Avram did not accept their offer. And he said, please talk to Ephraim ben Sochar, who was the leader of that group that day. And apparently he owned the Maris HaMachpelah. Which is at the edge of the field. And I want to pay full price for it. The Ephron, so Ephron said in front of everybody, no, you don't have to pay. And the Medrash points out he really did want the money, but he felt the pressure. And he says, I'll give it to you for free. And Avram said, no, I want to pay for it. So Ephron says, it's Arba Meir Shekel Kesef, 400 Shekel Kesef, which was an exorbitant amount at the prices of those days, for it, because it really wasn't worth that much. But because Ephron wanted the money, but Ephron was compelled to offer it for free, so Avram gave them the price that he suggested that it was worth, not that he was demanding over Lasocher. In other words, he gave it to him in the best possible way. It's a negotiable currency. In other words, so he paid. Now the question is, and this is the question my father would raise. Listen, God gave all of Eretz Yisrael to Avram Avinu. So in reality, in legally, in theory, Abraham owned all of Eretz Yisrael. Matter of fact, you know, the Rishonim have, there's an opinion of Rashi, opinion of the Rambam, opinion of Rabbeinu Yonah. Avram, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says that Avram had 10 Nishonos, 10 tests. Most of the Rishonim say the 10th test, the last test, was the Akedah. However, Rabbeinu Yonah says no, the Akedah was the 9th test. What was the 10th test? The 10th test was that here God promised him, told him all of Eretz Yisrael is his, and he had to go pay. He felt this need to pay for the Moris Machpelah, and he didn't complain. Matter of fact, that's the main point. By the way, the main point of the 10 tests was not just that Avram did it. The main point in the tests was that in all these situations, Avram didn't complain about it. He didn't say, "Hey God, why?" That was the. It wasn't just that he did it, but he did. He did. There was no. He didn't write a book. Why does bad things happen to good people? You know. So whatever it was, it was. Anyway, so the question. So the. So then Abraham. And that. By the way, I'm not finding fault with people who question, but they're not Avraham Avinu. That was why Avram was unique, was special. You know? So the question is, why was Avram so determined? Why was Avram so determined? And I would see Ephron, it was true, it was social pressure. But Ephron is ready to offer. Ephron is ready to offer it for free because of social pressure. Why shouldn't Avram take it? HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave all of Eretz Yisrael to him. He insisted on paying without any questions asked. And my father said that the reason was, let me say what I want to suggest first. Now, the people of the Bnei Ches, and it's very interesting, the Medrash tells us about Yosef, that when Yaakov was died, he says, Al nosik bereini b'mitzrayim, do not bury me in Egypt. Do not bury me in Egypt. Why don't bury me in Egypt? He says, I'm a lamb, and Mitzrayim is a chamor, so do not. He didn't want Egypt to redeem itself with him. What's the idea? He didn't want Egypt to redeem. The Meshech Chochma says in Parshas Chayisara, "Vayichi Yaakov Beretz Mitzrayim Shvayas Reshana." What do you mean? Yaakov lived in Egypt. What do you mean he lived in Egypt? He lived in one city. Why did it say "Vayichi Yaakov Beretz Mitzrayim Shvayas Reshana"? Yaakov had an impact on all of Egypt. Yaakov was revered by all of Egypt. Everybody in Egypt looked up to Yaakov. And Egypt wanted to identify also. They recognized Egypt was a place to a certain degree, on a certain level, on an intellectual level. Egypt was probably at that time the most advanced country. But on a moral level, Egypt, K'mayis Eretz Mitzrayim, K'mayis Eretz Kanaan, Mosasu. And but nevertheless, everybody recognized the greatness of Yaakov. And Yaakov was scared that Egypt will try to redeem itself. Egypt will try to redeem itself through him. by identifying with him, they will try to redeem themselves. So he says, Al Nosik Mareni B'Mitzrayim. Don't bury me in Egypt, because if they bury me in Egypt, my grave is going to become the monument of Egypt. So, and this, to a certain degree, was what I think was the problem. The Egyptians wanted, the B'nai Ches wanted to identify with Avram. That's why they were determined, that Avram should be buried in the best of their graves, because that, in a sense, they wanted to redeem themselves, because they had high regard for Avram. The whole world had high regard for Avram. So, but Avram didn't want it. And I think there are two reasons why Avram didn't want it. One reason is he didn't want the Egyptians to identify themselves with him. But I think there's a second reason that perhaps is more important, because we know the tendency that when the nations identify with a Jew, so we become impressed with those nation, with the nation. There was if the B'nai Ches would identify with Avram, and Avram would be someone revered by the B'nai Ches, there's a possibility that our attitude towards the nations, living in Canaan, will change also. After all, who is their hero? Who do they revere? So we have to be on guard. First of all, Avram didn't want them to redeem themselves, because if they're Obed Avodah Zarah, they shouldn't say, they have to recognize they're worshiping idols, and not to say, okay, listen, we're good anyway, because you see, we are associated with Avram. Take a look at the nations of the world today. Everybody, Avram is a universal figure. Today, people are identifying themselves with Avram, whether it's Christianity, whether it's the Muslims, everybody's identifying with Avram. And in a sense, that gives them some kind of feeling of being the chosen, of being chosen. So Avram didn't want the nations of the world to identify. But even more important than that, if Avram had become a hero of the seven nations, of the B'nai Ches and the people in Canaan, that would affect our perspective of the B'nai Ches. So because of that, Avram did not want to be identified. Now, I think I mentioned when I was discussing about the difference between the king of Sodom offered Avram the Harachush Kachloch, you take the booty of the war. The question is, Avram took from Avimelech, he took from Paro. Why didn't he want to take? And the answer is, Avram answered it himself. The king of Sodom shouldn't say, Ani hasharti as Avram. He shouldn't take. You see, Paro and Avimelech, they gave over to Avram what they gave over to him. They gave him recognition because, like the B'nai Ches, in other words, because they recognized that he got things from God, that everything he got was from God. They recognized. The king of Sodom will claim, everything Avram has is from me. That everything Avram accomplished, that was because of me. And we have to understand that the accomplishments of Avram are the accomplishments of Avram. It's not the accomplishments of the other people that lived around Avram. So this is why Avram who was very careful. In other words, if the Bnei Ches, he paid the highest price, not so much he paid the highest price because he wanted it to be seen that it's his and not theirs, that they shouldn't be able to identify with it. And it's very interesting. So he says, so the pasuk says, "Vayishkol Avram leEfron es hakesef asher dibir basnei birkes." Avram gave the money to Ephron that was agreed in front of the Nechais, 400 shekel kesef over lasocher. Vayakum stay Ephron asher b'machpela asher lefnei mamre hasadim amar v'cholayitz asher b'sada asher b'chulol sadim laAvram lemikla laEinay b'Nechais v'chol boi shariro. So all of this became Avram's. In front of all the Bnei Ches, he acquired it. Then it says that Avram buried Sarah, v'achrekein, and then at the end it says again, v'yokam hasada v'amara asher bo l'Avram l'chuzes kever me'es Bnei Ches. It repeats itself. First it says the whole field and the cave became Avram's. And then it says Avram buried Sarah. And then it says again that the whole field and the cave became Avram's.
Why? Burial place.
Huh?
Burial place.
Burial place, yeah. Lachuzes kever. Yeah, okay. But Hamar Shibal Avram Lachuzes kever Meish Menechais. Why repeat it? But the answer is I think I saw this question in the name of the Brisker Rav. But the Brisker Rav gives a certain teretz, but I think there's a very simple teretz. You know, somebody could have, let's say in Chicago, somebody owns property in Chicago and they sell it. It's still under the jurisdiction of the city of Chicago. Avram didn't want it, so it's still identified with Chicago. It's not the former owner. It's a new owner. But it's still identified with Chicago. Here, Ephron was part of the Bnei Ches. He owned property that was part of the area of the Bnei Ches. Avram didn't want just that it shouldn't be identified with as Ephron's property. That was taken care of when he gave the money. Everybody saw that he gave the money. It was no longer Ephron's. But it's still in the area of the Bnei Ches. Avram wanted it identified, not to be identified as part of the area of the Bnei Ches. Not enough that it shouldn't be Ephron's. It shouldn't be area that the Bnei Ches could identify with. And that was accomplished when he buried Sarah. And why is that? It was important for him, that no one, that the Bnei Ches should not identify with Avraham and Sarah. With Avram and Sarah. So that's why he paid that exorbitant amount of money. But the question my father gave a different answer. And my father's answer was he mentioned the Gemara in Bava Metzia. The Gemara in Bava Metzia says that if a person entrusts somebody with fruit to watch for him, and the fruit is deteriorating a little bit, so there's a question: What should the shomer, the one who was entrusted with it, what should he do? So machlokas, the dispute between Rabbi Elazar and Chachamim. Rabbi Elazar says he should sell the fruit. Let's say he'll get $100 for it. And when the people come, he'll give them the $100, because if he waits till they show up, it's only going to be worth $50. And the Chacham say no. Why? Rotsa Adam Bekav Shalo Yoser Metisha Kav Mishal Chaveiro. A person wants one measure of his own more than 10 measures of somebody else. I don't know if that's true today. Anyway, so, but at least that's the way it should be. Well, Rashi says, why? Because these fruit, he worked, he labored over it. Why did Rashi have to put that in? Rashi was troubled. He said, Rashi was troubled. Maybe Rebbe Lezer is right. Sell the fruit. He'll get $100, and then with those $100, he will buy other fruit, and those will be his fruit. The answer, my father said, is there are two types of title. There is legal title, and there is psychological title. With the $100 of fruit, you could get legal title in that fruit. But if you didn't work, if you didn't plant, if you didn't harvest, you only have legal title. Psychological title you don't have in it. So my father said, that was way Avraham, because when it comes to Eretz Yisrael, it's not enough for us to have legal title. Legal title we were given from the time of Avraham. We have to have psychological title as well. And specifically in regard to the Maris HaMachpelah, which is the one part that he was acquiring at that point. Avram didn't just want it. If he had taken it as a present from Ephron, he would have had legal title. Legal title he had anyway. But psychological title he wouldn't have had. And we have to know that when it comes to Eretz Yisrael, it's not enough for us to have legal title. We have to have psychological title as well.
Thank you. Okay, that's not that. Don't forget to...